Hey everybody, this is Armando Torres, and you're listening to The Show Before The Show.
And I'm Paige Wesley.
And with us we have...
Andre Gazzetta!
Yay! We've got a great episode for you. I'd say this is one of our golden episodes, but honestly, it's one of our Nazi gold episodes. If you don't like that, just turn around. Just turn it off. I'm so sorry. But before we get into it, we have some news and review.
Yay!
Of course, we're still promoting our live show, which is happening June 29th, which is a Saturday in San Diego, California at the Comedy Palace.
Woo!
Showtime is at 7:30. We've sold quite a few number of tickets, so if you want to come, they're $10 in advance through our website and $15 at the door. I recommend getting them through our website. You can go to cultpodcastshow.com/San Diego or cultpodcastshow.com and then just head over to the show's page.
Yeah, get them now before they sell out.
And before we jump right into the episode, we're going to read another 5-star review.
Ba-ba-boom.
This one, the subject line is just wow. As a Christian, I do sometimes struggle with the jokes made in this podcast. Mondo, you are a heathen, bruh. Regardless, they put
not
that in
wrong.
Parentheses.
Not
Mondo,
wrong.
You are a heathen, bruh. Regardless, I love this podcast. Super educational and hilarious. I've tried listening to every single episode. It's that good. Thank you guys for the podcast. You're welcome. You're welcome so much. Hail Satan.
No.
Armando.
No.
No.
Texas Snake Hunter, is that you?
Thank you, Lord Jesus, for this Armando, who has tested my thing.
Well, we've got another Just Wow episode for you guys. I say a lot of things that probably are very heathen adjacent in this one.
Let's just say that I'm glad I sit on this side of the table, because I'm pretty sure the lightning wouldn't hit me.
Without any further ado, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello.
For the purposes of this podcast, we define a cult as organizations that rally behind an entity or leader who espouse beliefs outside the norm,
organizations that require physical or monetary sacrifice as a condition of membership,
organizations in which the doctrines followed by the leaders are different than that of the followers,
organizations in which isolation is encouraged either by commune living or by a policy of disconnection from outside relationships,
and organizations that actively recruit new members. All cults might have some or all of these traits, and as always,
these are our opinions.
Thank you for tuning into Cult Podcast. I'm Paige Wesley.
And I'm Armando Torres.
And with us we have...
Andre Gazzetta!
Yay!
And it's my week!
Bow, 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 bow.
Yay!
This has been months of me reading books about Hitler. I am sorry. In advance.
It feels bad, doesn't it?
Oh, so bad. Well, so... I ordered a bunch of books.
Mm-hmm. Fucks up your Amazon real bad.
Real bad, because Amazon's like, would you like this copy of Mein Kampf? And I'm like, no. But not, also...
More like, not yet.
How about nine?
Nine copies?
Nine Kampf, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I had the books in my car for a while, and Jake would get so freaked out, and he'd be like, do you have a jacket or a blanket or something? And I was like, what? And he was like, all of those books have swastikas on them. And anyone who walks by our car is going to think that you're a Nazi, and they're going to try and scratch the car up. And I'm like, this car is scratched already. He's like, I don't need a broken window because you wanted to read about Nazis. Obviously, these are all anti-Nazi books, but you can't tell when it's just covered in swastikas.
Yeah, there was a point in time where I had several white supremacist books and a Confederate flag in my back seat. And for one time, I tried to cover the Turner Diaries with the Confederate flag.
And you're like,
what the fuck am I doing?
Which is worse? I had looks like he writes Turner Diaries fan fiction written down for the roast I did last week and then crossed it out. Because when I tested it, people were like, what's the Turner Diaries? And I'm like, oh, what a blessed life you live. Where you don't have to know about the Turner Diaries. So yeah, so we're not strictly talking, I mean, we are talking about Nazis today. But like, we're not, this is not a deep dive into just Nazis in general. We will do that because they deserve their own episode and they've done crazy shit.
They're crazy.
Right.
I just want to mention that the two groups we've said deserve their own series are Mormons and Nazis.
Mormons and Nazis.
And I don't want to say that they're the same.
Yeah,
but
no,
I don't
the Nazis
not
are way
say.
More stylish.
I don't want to not...
That's terrible. Hugo Boss.
I'm just saying, the Nazis...
made the clothes.
The Nazis, no problem with drinking coffee. None at all.
None at all.
They drink super coffee, which is meth. They just...
Yeah. So much meth.
A lot of meth. What we're talking about today... is Nazis on the Run.
Nazis on the Run.
I wrote like a real pretentious intro the way that you do.
I love it.
In the middle of the Chilean countryside, up into the mountains, 20 miles from the nearest city, sits a compound that spans 53 miles, surrounded by over 30 miles of electrified fence with targeting just like Jurassic Park. They also have a... I'm not kidding. There's a video of it. It's real crazy.
Yeah, there's several movies about it, including Jurassic World.
There's raptors. This is a raptor cult. I'm sorry. They have a 5-story watchtower that would give them an hour's worth of warning if anyone was to enter from any direction towards the compound. It contained its own school, a hospital, 2 different airstrips, a self-sustaining agricultural enterprise, and an electrical power station. And that's just the stuff that's on the books. Unofficially, this compound also contained miles of tunnels underneath the ground and what appear to be military barracks, torture chambers, and a weapons manufacturing plant responsible for replicating ammunition, guns, and sarin gas. There's also rumored to be a hideout for some of the world's most sought-after fugitives. Today we're talking about Colonia Dignidad. El cóndor de los Andes despertó del sol. Hijo es del dios Inti. Volando por sobre...
Wow.
This is, yeah. Now, Colonia Dignidad is tricky because it's only been exposed more recently than a lot of the big heavy hitter cults that we cover. And it has a pretty big history. There's only a handful of books about it. Most of them are just kind of adjacent and not truly about the compound itself. But recently, in the last like 3 years, there have been like 3 different documentaries made. So those are going to be a lot of our sources. There's one main survivor. We'll talk about him a lot more in episodes 2 and 3. This is at least a 3-part series. Who is basically responsible for most of what we know about the compound because he's been willing to speak out. Most other people are not. There's some tricky things about the compound. And in order to understand it better for episodes 2 and 3 and to understand why it exists and why it became the horror it became, we kind of have to understand how it got there in the first place. With all of the cults we cover, we always want to find out why a cult happened and where it happened, why at that time and place. And to do that for Colonia Dignidad, we have to cover some of the darkest parts of history. Colonia Dignidad was built not only by, but for the protection of fugitive Nazis. And so for part one of this series, we have to start with Nazis.
I did not see that coming.
There needs to be a word for being both excited and also upset that you're excited.
I know. It's interesting information, but also... upsetting.
Yeah, it's like when somebody goes, oh man, did you see that video of the NASCAR car wreck? And you're like, oh.
Now, I do want to preface this. I will provide a number of sources, but there are huge sections of this episode in particular that are going to be part speculation zone and part Paige's conspiracy theory corner. The sources for this episode are Al Jazeera's documentary, The Colony, Chile's Dark Past Discovered, the History Channel's documentary on Colonia Dignidad, which is a little bit older and not quite as extensive as the Al Jazeera one. The Al Jazeera documentary covers a lot of the current legal fight for the victims of Colonia Dignidad who are trying to get restitution and also have what happened to them declared as an actual crime. Currently, the government does not like talking about Colonia Dignidad.
Fun.
In fact, Colonia Dignidad still stands. It still exists. Right now, it's being billed as a resort called Villa Bavaria.
What?
Yeah.
Where is this?
Chile.
Chile. Okay. So I've actually just looked this up, and it says in Chile, they call it Colonia Dignapapi. Is that correct?
No.
Is that nothing?
Instead of dad?
Yeah.
So Colonia Dignidad was the German title. It was the Dignity Colony, the Society for Educacional de Dignidad, basically. Yeah.
And Colonia Dignapapi is the same thing, but more caliente.
It's for the people who like really dig Drake. But yes, so it's
for people with Colonia Dignidad issues.
Right, right. Part of the reason they called it Colonia Dignidad and Colony Dignity is it was a colony that maintained German ideals of purity.
Excited and upset that I'm excited.
And we'll get into a lot more of that in episode two. Essentially, the way that this is kind of going to go, this first episode is going to be the history that led up to Colonia Dignidad being created. Continuing on with sources, we've got books, Operation Paperclip, The Secret Intelligence Program That Brought Nazi Scientists to America by Annie Jacobson.
That is the gritty reboot of Clippy.
Clippy, yeah. Yeah, hardcore. It's the reboot of Clippy that's like, hey, I know you were sewing twins together for the Germans, but you could do it for us and we won't, you know, bring war crimes against you. So the next book is Hunting Eichmann, How a Band of Survivors and a Young Spy Agency Chased Down the World's Most Notorious Nazi by Neil Bascom. And also The Hitler Legacy, The Nazi Cult in the Diaspora, How It Was Organized, How It Was Funded, and Why It Remains a Threat to Global Security in the Age of Terrorism by Peter Lavenda. We've also got the History Channel's article on Hitler's death cause / teeth analysis. We also got seasons 1-3 of Hunting Hitler from the History Channel. I do want to preface, and specifically season 2, episode 8, but I do want to preface that by saying the History Channel is like just right above TLC as far as credibility goes.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. That's why we also read books. But the cool thing about Hunting Hitler is they go extensively into the rat lines of how high-ranking Nazis escaped Germany to South America. So we're going to cover that pretty briefly here. But if you're super interested in it, definitely watch Hunting Hitler. It's all on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if you're super interested in it, you should definitely listen to the last podcast on the left series on Joseph Mengele. Mengele was not at Colonia Dignidad. There's a lot of speculation that he was. There are other people that were definitely there. He's just not one of them. They do a really great job of kind of outlining what Nazis did to gain passage across the ocean.
The Third Reich, as far as I believe, had like a really good travel advisor.
It was the Catholic Church.
No, it was actually the gnome from Travelocity.
But in real life, it was also very much the Catholic Church.
That gnome is hella racist.
Before we dive in, I do want to issue a bit of a warning. There'll be both facts and speculation. I will definitely try to identify which one is which. So some of these facts may frustrate and anger you, and I'm sorry, but they need to be said. Americans, in particular, really love to have their own tidy version of how World War II ended, and it's just not accurate. I mean, first of all, Russia basically won that war. We really like to take credit for it, but it was not us. It was full-on Russia. And most importantly, everyone that we consider quote-unquote the bad guys mostly got away. despite having murdered millions of innocent people. There is kind of a happy ending to it eventually, but it can be frustrating sometimes to hear that people who did some of the worst things we can imagine essentially got away with it for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, that Travelocity gnome still has a job at Travelocity.
I know. Can you believe that?
I'm pretty sure he got to work with William Shatner, who I'm not unconvinced is old Hitler.
I mean,
look into it.
Okay, sure, sure.
Have you ever seen Hitler without a mustache? He looks just like William Shatner.
I'm sure he doesn't, but also, it's been 70 years. Hitler would be roughly 126.
He's dead if he's still alive. Wait. Holy shit. That's the dumbest sentence I've ever said. If he escaped Germany. If
he escaped, he is dead.
Yes.
Pretty much all of these people are now dead.
If they're still alive.
But a lot of them, if they're still alive. But a lot of them lived to be 70 or 80 and lived free for most of their lives. Here is the official and historically accepted version of Hitler's death and, by extension, the end of the war on the Western Front. According to army reports and documents recovered from Hitler's bunker in Berlin by the Soviet forces, because they are the ones that raided it, in April of 1945, as the Soviet forces closed in on Berlin and supplies and manpower dwindled, Hitler retreated to his bunker with some of his closest confidants and his longtime mistress, Eva Braun. Refusing to be taken alive, Hitler had procured cyanide tablets enough for himself, his mistress, Joseph Goebbels, his wife Magda, their six children, Hans Krebs, and Hitler's beloved German shepherds who were living with them.
Wait, did you say he fed cyanide to dogs?
He had cyanide ready for the dogs. He got enough for the dogs.
Do you know how much peanut butter you're going to need to make the dog eat the cyanide?
Well, we'll find out in just a minute.
Oh. That's not true. Chewie would eat poison if I handed it to him. The dogs aren't as smart as you think they are.
Yeah. Late at night on April 28th, Eva and Hitler were married in a private ceremony in the bunker. There's some debate as to how long Eva and Hitler were married, anywhere from 45 minutes to a whole day. Reports vary, and obviously everyone who was there is dead, so...
I'm just glad that they could finally, you know, have sex.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they were doing it before.
No, not till marriage, Paige. He might be a Nazi, but he believes in...
Yeah, I doubt it.
So he was married for either 45 minutes to a day.
Yeah, we don't know so exactly the
scale.
Time.
The scales of his marriage is on one end, Britney Spears' second marriage, and on the other end, Britney Spears' third.
Forced marriage. Yeah. they were married in a private ceremony in the Führerbunker, which is what it was called.
Ooh.
With the Goebbels family in attendance. The following day, Hitler received word that Mussolini had been captured alive, assassinated, and then hung by his feet in front of a crowd who attempted to mutilate his body. They basically treated him like a piñata, which thankfully he was dead at that point. I guess if you're him, you're just like, that would have hurt a lot.
Yeah, that's horrifying.
Yeah, it's real bad.
The worst punishment involved in that is for the children who, once the piñata broke open.
No candy, just intestines.
Oh, God.
Ooh, sorry.
Unless you're a little kid that's really into bones.
I mean, you know, there have been. We call them serial killers.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Some people. Fearing the same fate, Hitler tested the cyanide tablets on his dogs before instructing Eva to take a tablet. He then took a tablet himself, but before the tablet could take effect, he shot himself in the head through the right temple. Goebbels and Krebs then took control of the German army and carried both Eva and Hitler's bodies to a bomb crater where they were doused in gasoline and set on fire. Days later, the entire Goebbels family would ingest cyanide and die in the bunker, ensuring that the Russians found no survivors. The bodies were identified by the Russian army, who compared cranial measurements and dental records and have claimed that the bodies are conclusively Hitler and Eva Braun. Are you ready to get into conspiracy theory corner?
Yes!
Of course, always, at any time, especially at family gatherings.
Great. Because there are problems with this story.
And I'm going to go see my mom soon. So this is great.
There you go. If you ever hear that crazy person shouting on a street corner that Hitler escaped and is alive, they're not that crazy. There are things that could potentially suggest that that is the case and that mm-hmm. Hitler faked his death. So, for starters, as far as I could find online, the first conclusive dental records match in recorded forensic science history occurred in 1948, which is 3 years after the fact. Is it possible that they waited this long to corroborate Hitler's death? Possibly, but that presents another problem. There's no clear evidentiary chain of custody.
Wait, that's a word with dentures in the name?
Yes.
And that's a teeth science?
It's evidence.
Oh.
Evidentiary.
Oh, I thought you were saying evidentures.
No. And that's science. I'll get to dentures.
I don't know, man. This is 1940s dentistry. They were doing all types of dumb shit, like putting leeches on your teeth to suck the plaque out.
So, evidentiary chain of custody refers to when you have evidence, in order for that evidence to be admissible in court in the United States. It's not the case everywhere else.
Gotcha.
Necessarily. But typically, with forensic science, in order for a piece of evidence to be considered to be valid and admissible in court, you have to demonstrate a clear evidentiary chain of custody. That means you have to track that piece of evidence from the crime scene to the lab to the court. You basically have to prove where that evidence was all along the way and prove that it hasn't been tampered with.
And that it visited at least one dentist, which right. is where the evidentiary, that's where the dentures come in.
So,
see, I'm getting it.
There you go. The other thing to keep in mind is that DNA evidence was not available at the time, especially because the bodies were badly burned. And DNA matching later has been inconclusive, in part because their DNA is so old and the bodies were badly burned.
Your DNA so old, we found it next to dogs and gerbils. I like to imagine that Goebbels was actually a family of gerbils.
Here's the thing.
Nazi gerbils, if you will.
Every time I hear the word gerbil, I just think of someone gurgling balls for some reason. What?
I think of somebody mispronouncing gerbil.
I think of just gerbils. Little Nazi gerbils.
Little gerbils in their little...
Like tiny Hugo Boss suits.
Tiny Hugo Boss suits riding around in little jeeps.
Little VW bugs.
Who are you going to terrorize, little fella?
their little wheels, they look like Nazi. Nonsense, but when they get spinning, it forms a swastika.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, they're like rims, like those fancy rims that make images.
This is probably the episode where we should talk about the time that I accidentally made a swastika quilt.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Because we cut this out of another episode because we were like, yeah, another time. This episode's too long. My grandmother taught me how to quilt as a child, and she was trying to make it simple for me, so she just had, like, strips, and she was like, sew these strips together in groups of three, and then we'll cut them into squares, and then we'll sew the squares back together. And I assembled the pattern backwards, but because they weren't, like, Nazi colors, no one automatically noticed until we entered it into a quilt fair. Thankfully, in the middle of, like, the, like, nowhere California mountains, so nobody was, like, offended, but at a certain point, people were like, did you know that your quilt has swastikas on it?
My favorite part about seeing a swastika in the wild is as soon as you see it, because they're usually not in Nazi colors. They're usually etched into bathroom stalls or on quilts.
Or spray painted backwards on the sides of buildings.
And so you'll see a swastika in the wild, and you'll be like, huh.
Yeah.
Oh, racism.
Yeah, that's right. The next time we go to my parents' house, I'll show it to you. Because my mom still has it.
That's hilarious. That's
yeah.
The next time we go to my mom's house, I'll show you guys my gerbil who we don't talk about anymore.
But yeah, so that's the time I accidentally made a swastika quilt, and I'm so sorry. Anyway, their DNA is so old, they can't match it. So the main source for identifying this as Hitler's body is his teeth and his dental records. But fun fact about Hitler, he had one ball.
Really?
Yeah.
And it was full of pee.
Yeah. He just had the pee ball. That's why he was so angry.
Mein Kampf is actually German for my struggle. And if you read the book in German, it's all about how he has to pee all the time.
He's just like, I have to choose a side of the shorts, but neither one's comfortable. No, fun fact about Hitler, he had terrible teeth, and they were so terrible that he largely wore dentures.
All the meth.
I mean, that and just it was the 40s.
Yeah. That's why he grew that dumbass fucking mustache, because he was like, anything to make you not look at my teeth.
Don't look below this. Dentures that have allegedly been in the custody of an interpreter and only revealed in 2018. That's where the evidentiary chain of custody breaks down. So in April 2018, there was an English publication of a Russian memoir written by an interpreter. She was an interpreter during World War II, and she says that she was entrusted with a set of dentures in 1945 and tasked with cross-checking them against Hitler's dental records. I don't know why an interpreter would be trusted with that.
Yeah, what?
I don't know why we're just suddenly believing somebody's random ass book. Anyone can lie in memoirs. Moby said he dated Natalie Portman. Anything is fucking possible. But the teeth that she has do match Hitler's dental records. But here's the problem with that. They're dentures. So pictures of Hitler's teeth have shown that when he died, he only had 4 actual remaining teeth.
What?
Technically.
Ugh, gross.
Yeah, like he could floss with a pool noodle. Yeah.
So you're saying when he died, Hitler looked like all of us did during the years between 3 and 4, where you like lost them all,
yeah,
but weren't done growing them back yet?
I like to think that Hitler looked like those sets of like gummy hillbilly teeth you can get out of those quarter machines. Yeah, they say that the few teeth that were still there were misshapen, brown, and flecked with white tartar deposits.
Mm-hmm.
But
his teeth weren't Aryan.
Yeah, even his teeth weren't Aryan. And I don't know how much you guys know about rich people with bad teeth. I mean, I know you know a lot about Lil Wayne.
Yeah.
But rich people with bad teeth often have multiple pairs of dentures. When George Washington died, he left behind almost dozens of dentures. And all of them would have matched his dental records, even though they didn't really keep dental records at the time. So, taking into account that dentistry had gotten considerably better between 1780 and, you know, 1940, it's very possible that Hitler had multiple pairs of dentures, enough to leave a pair behind, but still have a pair for, like, eating. Like his church teeth and his regular teeth.
These are my eating teeth. These are my church teeth. These are my yelling teeth. They stay in better.
Right. So it's extremely possible that the teeth that this woman has are Hitler's teeth, but they may not be the only pair, and we cannot completely confirm that they were in his mouth when he died. I don't know if anybody listened to the episode of Women Who Kill that I was on, where I talked about Belle Gunness. But Belle Gunness also faked her death. And she did it kind of much in the same way, by burning a body. When you burn a body, you remove a lot of identifying characteristics. If you've got somebody who's roughly the same size and build as you, throw some fake teeth in them, that body's you.
Yeah.
So,
real quick, just a pause. Just as a quick poll.
Sure.
You now own Hitler's old dentures. Do you try them on once? You clean them. They're clean. They're completely clean. There is absolutely zero chance you will have any old germs on you at all, and they're completely safe. Do you try them on?
Of course. Why is this even a question?
Yeah, of course. Andrea's shaking her head no, like she doesn't want to chew like Hitler.
No! I mean, I don't want to chew anything with, or maybe I only want to chew bad things with them.
Yeah.
Like, I only want to eat bad stuff, or I want to just like curb stomp the dentures. But, like, not while they're in my mouth, because, like, my job. But, like,
curiosity
would get the better of me.
I won't put the dentures in and say a lot of progressive stuff.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I'm
trying to whitewash those dentures.
So, let's get into some weirder shit. 2 weeks before he allegedly passed away, Hitler's yacht was spotted at one of his northern strongholds, and he was also conspicuously seen walking around the village relatively relaxed. Seems a little weird.
Yeah, especially the relatively relaxed part.
Because by then he would have known that they were losing the war. You know, yeah. It's not like it immediately turned in 2 weeks. He already knew.
I just mean, like, if I saw somebody, I probably wouldn't remark on how relaxed they look at the time. Like they're a pair of jeans at Target. This okay. one's relaxed. This one's very relaxed. And this one is Hitler on a yacht.
So
damn, those are relatively relaxed jeans.
I like the low-rise Hitlers.
Oh, these jeans are pure.
Oh no,
I'm sorry.
So
they come in gerbil sizes too. Thank you.
So, also interesting to note is Hitler's sisters, his only remaining family at the time, were summoned to Berchtesgaden, where they were given safe passage out of the war zone. Their names are Angela and Paula, and they were alive as recently as the year 2017.
They're also commonly referred to as Sistlers. That's Sistlers.
Sistler?
Hitler sisters. Sistlers.
That sounds like a horrible restaurant.
Come on down to Sistlers, where all of our cooks have big old fucking things on them. Is it a cyst? Is it just the way they were born? We don't know. Come on down.
Is it Hitler's extra ball that one of them stapled to their face?
We got Hitler's denture. We got Hitler's ball.
It's full of pee. Don't squeeze it. So he had relatives, not necessarily the sisters themselves, but their few offspring, as recently as the year 2017, and every report with them is basically them saying that they're not planning on having any children. The bloodline ends with them.
Yeah. There's a video, I'm sure you saw it for this, but the video of them, like, each giving an individual interview being like, yeah, we kind of decided that, you know, we're kind of done passing on the name. Which is, I like that they say they kind of decided it and not, it's hard to do Tinder with the last name.
Hi, it's me, Jenny Hitler.
I like to travel mostly to Germany and Austria and Argentina.
So to recap, these are Hitler's sisters?
Sistlers.
Hitler had two sisters.
Right.
Sistlers.
They were safely removed from Germany prior to the end of the war.
And they went to Argentina?
No, they went to a couple different places, mainly just in Europe, far enough outside the war zone where they were safe.
Okay.
They, in particular, were not being persecuted because they didn't do anything. Is that right?
I think they've been persecuted a bit since.
Persecuted might be the wrong word. They weren't,
tried as criminals or pursued as criminals. No,
they were not involved.
Yeah, persecuted is probably the wrong term.
They were not culpable.
Yeah.
I guess, let's put it that way.
That's what I want.
But it does show that he knew that the war was coming to an end and that it was going to be a problem, and he had ways and means to ensure safe passage out of Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So his sisters had no kids.
I believe one of them had one kid, and I think that's the person that's like,
we're good.
Okay. Yeah. So
I'm just trying to focus on my gene company.
So they also, his sisters have given a number of interviews over the years. They don't really talk about his death. They don't necessarily acknowledge it. All they say is that they were brought to Berchtesgaden and they were transported safely.
Do you think that, because that could either be like they know something or...
it's just painful. Yeah it could be either way.
Because no, he's still, I mean, he's Hitler, but he's still your little brother.
Right.
Or older brother.
I think he's in between.
Oh, really?
I think
that
so.
That explains a lot,
honestly.
Yeah.
Middle child syndrome in heavy.
He had older brothers and sisters who had passed away already, too.
Oh, okay.
And their parents had passed away, so they were his only family, basically.
So he was Hitler in the middle.
I think so.
Yes, no, maybe. I don't know. Can you repeat the Third Reich?
Oh, jeez.
I am the boss of you now. I am the boss of Jews now.
Where are your papers? In a coastal town off the coast of Norway, just a little bit north of Hitler's northern compound, it would have been just a short trip from one to the other. There is evidence of Nazi ships and planes that were transporting gold and weapons out of the small cove.
Nazi gold. I got Nazi zinc right up there.
Yep.
Yeah, Nazi money.
There's also a southern route through Spain and through Italy that indicate high-ranking SS members took those routes. We can prove those routes with documents. So we know for a fact that a number of Nazis escaped through Spain under Francisco Franco, and then later went on to South America. More recently, in the last 10 years or so, they've uncovered indications of Nazis escaping through Italy particularly through a monastery just over the border, over the Alps in Italy, where they would be baptized and given new names.
So priests were helping them escape.
The Vatican was helping them escape.
Cool, cool, cool.
Yeah. With these new names, they were able to procure dead drop packages. So what these are basically new identities based around their baptized name. So if anyone asked about it, they could prove from their baptism records that they had a different name, that they weren't who they say they were.
I mean, say what you will about the Nazis. Say a lot, honestly, you should. But they were really good with documentation.
Yes.
They were, I mean, among other things, they were real grammar Nazis. So they were just like, they hammered it in and they got it done.
Well, they would then take these packages with fake identities and use the fake identities to secure official papers through the Red Cross, which then became their new identities and guaranteed them safe passage. So a number of high-ranking SS officials were granted new identities by the Catholic Church and then solidified those identities with actual paperwork for the Red Cross. So they basically had fake papers that then became real papers. Most of the refugees from World War II, even though they would have been Jewish, some of them had German names.
Yeah.
A lot of them did. Some of them were from German-speaking countries that Hitler had taken over. Some of them were Polish or Austrian and fleeing, and it was very easy to blend in because they look just like them. They have a new name. Everyone speaks German because Germany has controlled everything for the past 10 years. It's very easy for them to blend in and just be faceless names in a crowd.
So my another question I have, and this might be ignorant of me just because my understanding of the refugees is that they were mostly people who were put in concentration camps and forced to work for the Nazis. But wouldn't they be noticeably more well-fed and in better condition?
So that's not the only refugees.
Okay.
Because remember, yes, you have all of the refugees from the concentration camp. A lot of them boarded ships to America.
Yeah.
Some of them went to what would then later become Israel once the, you know, everyone else drew the borders.
And fun fact, Mexico. A bunch of them went to Mexico.
And Canada.
Yeah.
Canada was a big one as well. But you have to remember that in the course of the war, even if people weren't in concentration camps, their countries had been bombed to hell. I mean, Berlin was rubble for years. And now you had East and West. I think
it's pronounced rubles.
That's Russian. you now also had East and West Berlin and East and West Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people were fleeing that. So you have people who are Germans, who lived in Germany, who are fleeing because they no longer have a home there. And they don't know the state of what their country is going to be. Germany, after the war, was a pretty bleak-ass place for a bit.
We kind of fought the excitement out of them. They can't get too proud to be anything anymore.
I mean, they're a very stoic people to begin with.
Yeah. Do you want to hear a classic German joke?
Sure.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so fucking sorry.
Angela Merkel, I had no idea it was you. The only people that really had trouble blending in were the few people that had been in Nazi propaganda films.
Mm.
Some of them even got plastic surgery.
How good was plastic surgery in the 1940s?
Surprisingly good. I mean, that's when Marilyn Monroe had plastic surgery.
Yeah.
Monroe had plastic surgery?
Marilyn Monroe had hella plastic surgery.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they turned Hitler into William Shatner. They were really good.
Yeah, they were really good.
They turned Joseph Goebbels into a gerbil. It was amazing.
Here's the thing. They had started to get good at it, but it didn't always last as long.
Oh.
So as you aged, it didn't necessarily age well with you. And in some cases, it would cause people a lot of pain. There's rumors that Joseph Mengele had a number of plastic surgery procedures to alter his face so that he wasn't recognized, and that it was extremely painful towards the end. So there's that, at least, if you want to feel happy about something.
They were also given, because the skin would sag so much, they had to give them rudimentary facelifts, which they did with paper clips, and that's where we get the name Operation Paperclip.
It's not. That's not why.
You don't fucking know.
I do. I read the book.
Yeah? Well, I made it up. So what's up now?
Oh, God.
We're in conspiracies. This is how they start.
This is true.
I make them up. I say them into a microphone, onto a show, listen to a small group of people. Ipso facto, I am Alex Jones.
Okay, great. I will say plastic surgery looked a hell of a lot more realistic back in the day. But it also wasn't as extreme. So they could change your face just enough for you to be like, is that so-and-so? Maybe not. Hmm. You know, like it wasn't drastic. Like you didn't have like cat lady, but like you could get a nose job.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So in addition to these trackable trails through Europe and then subsequently to South America, we also have indications on the Canary Islands and on the coast of Argentina that there are records and remnants of plane crashes and sunken boats. These both corroborate an FBI document that claims that the Germans had perfected the ability to refill seaplanes from U-boats, which was not a thing anyone had been able to do yet.
So they found sunken planes and sunken U-boats?
So they have sunken U-boats and then like pieces of planes. So there's also specifically a record of a crash off the coast of Argentina that people remember and that police responded to. So it's suspected that from the plane, someone was able to call in a distress signal and they were able to make it close enough to shore to be able to help people off the plane.
So they didn't find any bodies, though?
No. Everyone landed alive.
Oh.
40 German bodyguards and German passengers.
And so then they just sunk their plane so they couldn't be detected? Bro, what?
Yeah, so they sunk a few planes, but additionally, those planes, they were able to repair the one that crash-landed off the coast of Argentina.
Damn.
And that plane went on to fly to two or three other airstrips in South America, one of which being Colonia Dignidad.
Dude, even their planes got plastic surgery.
Yeah, they. That's one of the one cool things on Hunting Hitler. Like, Hunting Hitler is ridiculous, and the acting is terrible, because it's a guy that's like, we just found this FBI document. And it's like, no, you didn't. It's been around for forever. Whatever.
My favorite part about Hunting Hitler is how at the end of every episode, he looks in the camera and he goes, and I would like to thank Jesus for this Nazi.
Thank baby Jesus for this propeller plane that we found in the ocean. Because that's the other thing, too, is like, they went out to Argentina and we're just like, all right, we're using this new like sonar technology that archaeologists use, and then they pulled like a chunk of propeller out of the ocean, like from a seaplane, and you're just like, oh shit, it's all there, like it's right there. They're like, that's a German U-boat, here's a chunk of propeller, and you're just like, fuck, okay, damn,
what's
all
right. that das Boot.
Jeez,
that's German for the boat, I think. Hey Google, what is Das Boot in English?
Das Boot means the boat in German.
Fuck! I know German!
You were wrong about paperclips, though.
I was super wrong about paperclips. I'm willing... I'll give you that everything I've said on this podcast has been wrong until now.
Pretty much.
I just think that... I'm wondering if Hitler was so good at disguises because he wanted to be an artist.
Very possible.
Ooh.
I mean, maybe he was painting that mug.
Ooh.
It's very good.
Recently...
He went to Color Me Nine. Das Boot is German for the boat.
Recently unclassified FBI documents also record that Adolf Hitler was allegedly residing in a small Nazi town in Argentina 3.5 months after he was supposedly dead.
Oh, this is the one with the photograph.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They cannot definitively prove it. And even the FBI, it's the Federal Bureau of Investigation. So they're investigating.
Yeah.
May not be him. May be him. Who knows?
If I remember correctly, so please correct me if I'm wrong. Sure. The whole document is like, we heard a thing, we sent a guy, we couldn't find him, but we found people who knew him and a guy who had a photograph. Here's a picture of that photograph.
Yeah.
That's like the whole file. They weren't like, we found him, we were like, fucking maybe. But the fact that they're investigating it is kind of like...
Yeah.
They also have
they
to kind
also
of
think that he's alive.
Yeah.
Now, here's the other thing, and that's the one thing that Hunting Hitler does over and over and over and over again, where it's like, we have a story, and they go and track somebody down, and it's like an old man who's like, yes, I was a child. I was here when the plane crashed. I watched Hitler and his bodyguards get off the plane in Argentina. And you're just like, fucking what? But then also it's like, okay, but that was 70 years ago.
Yeah.
And they're, and he's like, I remember because I'm still scared. I was like, of people who died 70 years ago? You know, whatever. But there's a lot of stories like that where they're like, yeah, Hitler was totally here. Like, we've all known about it this whole time. Nobody ever asked us.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people with, it's kind of like the people who are like, yeah, Tupac shops here every week. Like, it's that, where it's a lot of people that are like, he was totally here. His favorite ice cream was pistachio. How would I know that if he wasn't here? It's a lot of that.
Well, one of the things that lends a lot of credence to the Hitler is still alive theory is all of the albums that they released after his death.
And that sweet, sweet hologram.
I wrote this song in 94.
And yeah, and when Adolf Hitler popped off on stage at Coachella, I was like, oh shit, dude.
I had no idea he could twerk like that.
Did you see those jeans, dog? They are relaxed as fuck, bro.
I like that someone would see a hologram of Hitler in jeans, and the first thing they're like, is that relaxed fit? Boot cut? Skinny? What is that? Are those Levi's? The Seven for All Mankind kind of thing. But not all mankind, right? Yeah.
Hitler. We know.
They're not, Hitler.
They're not Levi's 501. They're just Levi's 88.
Oh.
I'm sad I was born in that year. You can't just have that year anymore. It's gone.
Yeah, you can't have the email address Andrea Gazzetta 88 because then everyone's like, I've come here to join your Nazi group.
Yeah.
Jeez. I was telling Paige and Mondo before the show a little bit, but my last name, Gazzetta, there's a map of where else it's popular, and it's like America, lots of Argentina.
Yeah.
So your family probably helped them.
You're very blonde.
Probably some Nazis.
What else? So you're Italian, and what else are you?
I'm Sicilian and German.
Oh.
So my mom's side is the blonde side, but my dad's side
are
is
Nazis.
The Nazi. Okay. Yeah.
Gotcha, gotcha.
Well, I mean, like, my grandpa was born here, so they're like distant relatives, right, but right, we share right, a last right. name.
What was really weird is whenever we leave Andrea's family, they always like, they always try and like give like money or something like okay. when we leave. And the last time we were leaving,
Italian.
Yeah, the last time we were leaving Milwaukee, her dad tried to hand me an old painting, just this old lost painting, and
of like dogs.
Yeah,
and there was like writing on the back of it,
and a whole gold brick. It was very weird.
Just take this bullion and this conspicuous art.
Now that you mention it, he did say, I'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Yeah, he really likes to put his arm out when he says those goodbyes.
Yeah. Aww. Well, the weird thing is that he's Andrea's dad, but his email is Mr. Gazzetta 88.
No.
Hey, quick speculation zone.
Yeah, it's dad is not a Nazi.
Yeah, what would it
disclaimer.
Be? Disclaimer. My dad's not a Nazi, and Armando's mom does not have a dick.
Yeah.
Quick disclaimer.
My dad did buy a steak, but it wasn't creepy.
No, it was totally
It was
cool.
The best steak. I had lobster.
It was
Your dad
really
is great.
There's also another document that claims that people observed Hitler and Eva Braun attending a ballet in Brazil. There is also a current living relative of Hermann Göring in Misiones, Argentina. Misiones is a small fortress that reportedly was the next stop for that plane that crashed in Argentina.
Hmm.
They would receive shipments from small seaplanes coming in from the coast. They were fortified and armed with tunnels and security. It's suspected that this could have been one of Hitler's hideouts, at least until Perón was no longer in power. Because there is a power shift in Argentina at one point that would potentially have displaced Nazis. If you listen to the last podcast on the left episodes about Mengele. Mengele suffers from this a little bit too. He ends up in, I believe, Uruguay. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that end up in Uruguay, kind of after the change in power in Argentina. Multiple high-ranking Germans escaped through South America. We've been able to prove it because they were captured there via the rat lines through both Italy and Spain.
Is rat lines
That's what they call them. So if you look up rat lines, it's a specific name for these specific routes.
Oh, routes. I thought you said they were caught via the rat lines, which is like a fun way to say like the snitch order.
Oh, no. Yeah. So I actually have a list of some of these people.
Oh, neat.
Andrea Artudovic escaped to the United States. He was arrested in 1984 after decades of delay and later extradited to Yugoslavia, where he died in 1988 from natural causes.
So somebody named Andrea stopped existing in 88, but somebody also named Andrea started existing in 88.
Am I 100 years old? Am I really the older woman?
Maybe.
The oldest woman.
The ultimate cougar.
Klaus Barbie, one of...
Okay.
That's his name. It's his actual name.
I've heard his daughter had the most plastic surgery in that she was completely plastic. It's Barbie.
Klaus Barbie was one of Hitler's closest advisors. He fled to Bolivia in 1951 with help from the United States, as he'd been an agent of the U.S. Army Counterintelligence Corps since April of 1947. He helped with Project Paperclip. Mm-hmm. He was captured again in 1983, and he died in prison in France on September 23rd, 1991. Alois Brunner fled to Syria in 1954. He died around 2010. Herbert Kuckers fled to Brazil in 1945. He was executed by Mossad in Uruguay in 1965. That's something we start to see pretty frequently, is that the United States is not tracking a lot of these people down, in part because we're using a lot of them and their research. Mm-hmm. But Mossad, the newly, you know, essentially birthed Israel, which... yes, there are problems. They're not perfect, but they're really good at killing some fucking Nazis.
Yeah.
Because they killed about half of these people. They tracked Nazis down like it was their fucking job. It's the closest thing we have to a bear Jew in real life, and I love it.
So the Mossad are tracking these people down like almost 20 years after.
About 20 years after, yeah.
And
just enough time to learn Krav Maga.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, so the people that are actually doing the killing probably were barely alive. They were probably children.
They're probably children of survivors for some of them. Yeah. Or they were young in the camps, because there were children in the camps. That's so true. Some of these people would have been children and are now adults, having spent their childhood in the camps, and they're now hunting down the people who persecuted them in the camps. I would love to see like a big blockbuster budget movie about this,
because
fascinating.
Isn't this kind of the plot of Munich or similar?
Sort of.
Okay.
Yeah, a little bit.
Is my other question is, so when they like track these people down, do they like, how do they verify that they are who they think they are?
A lot of dental records, believe it or not.
Never look a gift Nazi in the mouth. That's what they always say.
A lot of it, too, is by then they were able to pull the records from Red Cross and a couple other places and track them through the rat lines. Hmm. So they would basically say, we know they were here, we know they were here. And then they would get tips like, hey, they're in Paraguay or they're in Uruguay. Fly there, find them. And then they would have just people tracking them. They followed Mengele for 20 years before... like anyone got a shot at him. They really were hardcore tracking these people down.
If anyone deserves a TV show called Hunting Hitler, it's for sure
these guys. Mossad, yeah.
It's not the fucking, I'm assuming, chubby white dudes who run the show now.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but I assume at least one trucker hat is present on screen at all times.
No, it's like an army guy that's got like a nice butt and some cargo pants, and then just like a bunch of other white guys that are like, how could this happen? And you're just like, oh God, just let the army guy bend over again, I guess.
He drops a lot of pens.
He's always just like, check out this tunnel. And you're just like, yeah, check it out. So that brings me to Adolf Eichmann, one of the most famous that they tracked down. He fled to Argentina in 1950. He was captured in 1960, and he was executed in Israel on the 1st of June, 1962. He was one of the first ones they caught. He got too cocky. He and Mengele were traveling... not necessarily together, but they would cross paths a few different times, mm-hmm, until Eichmann got caught. Mangala.
Each time they crossed paths, they would trade the jeans they were wearing and tell each other the stories that they had.
And sometimes they would, like, stitch a little sunshine mm-hmm. onto the knee and then write messages about the time they lost their virginity to a camp counselor. That's for those of you who read the books. Just put it out there.
The books, by the way, are The Brotherhood of the Traveling Pure White Jeans.
I had no idea Mangala did anal. you can cut that one out, I guess, if you want.
I want it in there. Like Mangala did.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, no.
Joseph Mangala fled to Argentina in 1949. He then traveled through a number of other countries, including Uruguay and Paraguay. There are rumors that he ended up in Chile, but we cannot verify it. As far as survivors from Colonia Dignidad, none of them basically definitively say they ever saw Mangala there.
We can confirm that he was once seen in a Chili's, not Chile, the restaurant Chili's.
He doesn't deserve to have queso.
No.
He doesn't deserve the joy that is queso.
No.
He died in Brazil in 1979. Eric Priebke. Now, Eric Priebke is one of the few people that we have on record that they can track through the Italian rat line. They have his name in the baptismal records. They know he was at a very specific church and that he traveled through. He fled to Argentina in 1949 as well, but he wasn't arrested until 1994 and died in 2013 in custody.
Wow.
Damn.
That's an old ass Nazi.
Which brings me to my final one, Walter Rauf. Rauf was famous for creating the mobile gas chamber so that he could gas multiple Jews en route.
It's like the opposite of an ambulance.
Yeah, exactly. Jeez. It is. No, I mean, that's...
It is. You're right. Yeah. That is very... Goddamn. It's the evil ambulance.
And that is literally how he designed it. It was a van with a gas chamber inside of it.
There are very few good vans that have existed in history.
That's true. Most vans are bad.
The only good vans are ice cream trucks, and only like 30% of those are actually good.
Right. The rest are fronts for drugs.
Of course.
But Walter Rauf escaped to Chile, and he was never captured. And the reason he was never captured is the reason that we did this first episode today, because Walter Rauf escaped to Chile, where he was sheltered in a commune founded by another German fugitive, and that commune was Colonia Dignidad. They built an entire barracks underneath to house him and other fugitive Nazis while they built weapons to start the Fourth Reich.
Holy shit.
And that's where we'll pick up next week.
This motherfucker was trying to be the real-life Wreck-It Ralph.
Yes. There are rumors that Hitler made it to Colonia Dignidad. I cannot verify any of them.
That was going to be my like direct next question.
There is a rumor. I can't... There's no evidence.
Okay, I have a question. Were there people that maybe weren't necessarily, like... in like higher ups, like German people that also fled to Argentina to kind of start a new life or whatever?
Yeah, most of them are Gazettas.
So that is the lion's share of the population of Colonia Dignidad.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Colonia Dignidad, just to give you a little bit of a teaser for next week, is founded by a man named Paul Schaefer. Paul Schaefer collected a group of Germans that he kind of gave off this idea of wanting to stay true to German values and invest in German life. And he, unfortunately, at the same time, was also molesting children.
Ooh.
So he needed to get out of Germany and fast. So he went to Argentina.
And he had to leave his ice cream truck behind.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then later on to Chile and convinced his followers to follow him there. And as everyone knows, the second a cult moves and you're on the commune, then you're trapped there. So the families that followed him and their children, and then subsequently children's children and the few people that they gained along the way, became his prisoners and his workforce as he then worked to build weapons and make sarin gas. And as he kept them literally caged with electric fences. One of the interesting things in the Hunting Hitler episode is that the fences weren't just electric, they were geo-targeted, which meant that there were flip switches for each portion of fence. Yeah. So if you touched one part of the fence, they would have a light-up switch on a board that would tell you where the fence was. Oh, it's exactly God. Like Jurassic Park.
Yeah, the worst part is that when they invaded and they had to turn off those switches, when they tried to hack into them, the neighbor from Seinfeld would pop up and he'd go,
Got to say the magic word.
And Samuel L. Jackson with the longest cigarette in history was just hold like, God on damn
to
it.
Hold on to your butts. But it is, they are like the Jurassic Park fences.
She's never seen Jurassic Park.
What the fuck?
Here's the thing.
We talked about it at brunch the other day.
God damn it. What?
I've seen parts of Jurassic Park.
The original is so good.
Yeah. I've seen bits and pieces of it because I dated someone that really liked it, but I would always fall asleep. So
most people you've dated probably like it because everyone loves Jurassic Park.
The first one is a damn good movie.
Yeah. You're the wrong one here.
You're also the one who likes Gladiators.
Yeah.
God,
I hate you so much.
What is Jurassic Park but Gladiator of Dinosaurs? Come on.
Not at all.
Not even a little bit.
Nope. We need to watch this and The Thing.
Yeah.
And then Horror Virgin, if you guys listen to Horror Virgin, just did Alien.
Oh, hell yeah.
And just like listening to the Alien episode, I was like, oh, this makes me want to watch Alien again. I love Alien. This past week, I recorded an episode of Nerd Out of Compton. Where they have you talk about basically the one nerdy thing you like and then your favorite rapper. So I talked about Terminator and Ludacris for like an hour and a half and had some very in-depth discussions about victimhood and trauma based on Terminator and Alien. So, you know, whenever that comes out, I will post it in the group. But yes, so today, I'm sorry, all of the evil people that hurt people in World War II escaped and lived full lives. Until they were caught by Mossad.
Unless they died in the bunker, which we don't... That's the thing that sucks, is we'll never conclusively know for sure.
Exactly.
You can compile more and more evidence, but you'll never really truly know.
Yeah, there's never going to be a way to prove it. There wasn't enough... You know, it's not like now where it's like, yeah, we caught them on these street cams. Like, we don't know. We're never going to know. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
But we do know that Walter Rauf and a handful of other high-ranking Germans did make it to Colonia Dignidad and lived there quite peacefully for about 20-plus years.
Well, you've done a great job of setting up, like, precedents and the logic. The logic is sound of, like, why do certain things like burn the bodies? Like, you don't need to do that.
Right.
It's almost like it purposefully happened to allow them to escape. So you've done a perfect job of setting it up to where, like, this is one of the conspiracy theories that I can listen to where I'm like, okay, I can get behind it. You're not talking about gay frogs.
Yeah, like, I follow the money. I follow the intent.
Yeah.
I follow the possibility that it could happen.
I followed the hateful gerbil. I see where you're going.
It's around this wheel over and over and over and over and over again.
I saw the Nazi quilt. I know what you're talking about.
If you rip it open inside, there's a map to where Hitler was. No, there's not. I'm sorry. It's just fabric from like an upholstery sample pack. So next week we get to talk about the horrible things that Nazis do when no one is watching them or making them follow any rules.
Which is disturbing.
Yeah, imagine the people that murdered millions of people with impunity now have unprecedented, unfettered access to families and children, and they have no rules.
And worst of all, I don't want to spoil anything. But the worst crime of all is none of them saw Jurassic Park at all. They all dated somebody who had seen, like, who loved the movie, so they saw, like, bits and pieces.
Right.
But they never truly saw... Wait a second. Didn't you say a lot of Gazettas come from Argentina?
I will also... I do have to give a shout-out to Ryan Shores and Robert Timothy from Degenerate Podcast, because no one else had done an episode on this, and then they talked about it on an episode, which is when I was like, what, a cult that we haven't heard of that's not on our list, and fell down a rabbit hole that resulted in me ordering a lot of books.
Those are my favorite types of episodes to research.
They're actually going to be on the third episode with us of this series.
Which Yay! Is great.
And you can remember Bobby, not Ryan, but
Ryan
you can
hasn't
remember,
been on the show before, yeah. but will be. Yeah.
But Bobby was on our Onshinrikyo episode.
Yes, and funny enough, he gets to talk about sarin gas again.
We basically only have him around to talk about.
Like, hey,
sarin
we have
gas.
Stuff that exploded. Do you want to talk about it?
And he got like hard instantly.
Yeah. Well, he also just finished his thesis, so congrats to Bobby. It's not about sarin gas. I don't.
Oh, I was
I
really
think?
Excited.
God, when
did you
I
give
hope
me a
not.
Weird face when I said he got hard. It was easy to see he got hard. His jeans are super relaxed.
Damn it.
Those white jeans show everything.
I do think this is actually, it's really interesting because they essentially at one point, and we'll go over it a little bit in the next episode, but mostly in episode 3, they successfully do what Om Shinrikyo was trying to do, but their heads were too full of acid to pull it off.
Oh, God.
Because they were able to successfully manufacture and fabricate weapons where they were building guns. And they had, they would basically buy one gun and then make a second one.
Okay.
To match it.
So they were just control C, control V.
Basically, yes.
So Clippy was a fucking Nazi this whole time.
Clippy has been a Nazi this entire time.
Microsoft, get the fuck away from us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this was the first episode on Colonia Dignidad. Next week, we'll get into the colony itself.
Mm-hmm.
First, just as its own religious colony, and then finally in episode 3, as the private prison and police force for Pinochet during his revolution.
Damn.
Yeah.
It's going to get excited.
Real dark at some points, but I just find it to be a very fascinating story, and it's one that not a lot of people know about, and so I think that it's worth us spending time on it.
It's always fun to enlighten you guys on things that make you feel bad and then also good about at the same time. It's very interesting. Hey, guys. We're doing a live show in San Diego.
Yay! I'm so sorry. I'll stop talking.
Auto-tune it. Auto-tune it.
All right.
Auto-tune it.
Okay, so now this isn't going to make any sense, but that wasn't as bad as it sounded because it was heavily auto-tuned for you guys' listening pleasure. Yeah, the live show's coming up. It's June 29th, which is a Saturday. We're doing it at 7:30 p.m. It's going to be in San Diego, California at the Comedy Palace.
If you come out, I promise to hug you.
We'll have two separate shows, one for huggers and one for non-huggers.
And one for full-blown tongue kissers. Just let me know which line you want to be in.
I did not sign up for this.
No. Armando's doing the tongue kissing.
And I'll have previously drank no less than 3 whiskeys and had no more than 5 tacos. So, sign up for that. Get some cheese in your gums. We have tickets available for $10.
That's
online at www.cultpodcastshow.com/San Diego, or you can go to our website, which is cultpodcastshow.com, and head over to the shows page. If you like me and the horrible products that I invent almost seemingly every single week, then you should follow me on Instagram and Twitter so that you can give me funding and I can make these things a horrible reality. My Instagram and Twitter is @MondoDoesStuff. That's M-A-N-D-O does stuff. And you can also find all my show dates for comedy and et cetera at MondoDoesStuff.com.
If you like the things that I say, why? but if you want to send me pictures of gerbils in outfits that are not Nazi uniforms...
Oh, I've got a website for you after we
oh
finish.
Oh my God, yes. Please send them to @sundresscomic on all the things. You can also check out my art on Instagram @AndreaGazzetta. Or you can check out my website, AndreaGazzetta.com, that now has a store for all the paintings that I have made by Armando. So yeah.
All the paint. I made the website, not the paintings.
Oh yeah. No, I made the paintings. Armando made the website because he's magical. But yeah, check that stuff out. Thanks.
And if you want to send me your favorite conspiracy theory, please do send it to @PageWesley on Twitter or @RampageWesley on Instagram.
If you want, if you like our show and you want to support us, you should follow us on Instagram, which is @CultPodcast.
Or on Twitter @CultPodcastShow.
Also, feel free to send us an email. You can send us stuff for prospective cults or complaints about things I say about Levi's, or if you're Bill Gates and you want to fund one of the five movies we've pitched that have been amazing pitches. I know you're not into movies yet. Bill, B-Dog, B-Gates, listen to me. You're leaving money on the table right now. We got a gritty, clippy remake. Tom Hanks is attached. Anyway, you can send that over to cultpodcastshow@gmail.com. Thank you, Bill Gates. I love you. Bye.
And if you want to send us, don't send us Nazi gold. I don't think people are supposed to have that. But if you want to send us maps to Hitler's treasure, you can mail those to 3756 West Avenue 40, Suite K, number 237,
like the Shining,
Los Angeles, California, 90065.
And if you want to find all of that information and more, you can go to our website, which is cultpodcastshow.com.
And I think for this one, we're going to say, don't help Nazis escape over the Alps, and don't drink the Kool-Aid. Bye!